The VGRT Gaming Podcast, Episode 720, recorded on April 11th, 2024.
Welcome to the 720th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and 553rd episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Denzer.
I'm Scott Turk.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry.
Yeah, we all know the big controversy going on, really big controversy.
Which one?
And that is Taven. They shrunk Taven.
They shrunk who?
There's a Justice for Taven hashtag going around now. It's sad.
Who? I don't know who this Taven is.
TJ, do you know anything about this?
I don't know much about Taven either.
So, if you play World of Warcraft, there is an achievement called A World Awoken. And of all the World of Warcraft players who have finished it, only 0.241% have gotten it. And when you get that achievement, you get a reward. You get a Bakar, which is basically like a wolf dog. Not a wolf, I mean a lion dog. A Bakar called Taven. And he's a really big mount. He's huge. And they've shrunk him. They shrunk him because there's some clipping when you try to ride it. And so he's like a third smaller, and everybody's upset about it who owns Taven. So, yeah. Hey, I'd be pissed off, too. He looks better when he's big, when he's huge, because he's like twice the size of any other Tavens. And who doesn't want to ride a giant dog?
I like riding the giant cats instead, so...
Yeah, but you see, the thing is that these are huge. Imagine riding one of the cats in World of Warcraft... Except they're like 2 to 3 times bigger than the regular cats. So yeah, everybody who owns it are really upset.
I don't play World of Warcraft, so I guess that's why I missed that one.
Yeah, you know, not as upset as this woman who had to leave a Yu-Gi-Oh! Tournament. Well, she wasn't upset. It's just that nerds stink, and they don't wash. And she had to leave because the entire place stunk. Did you hear about this one?
Yes, I did hear about this one.
Yeah, so it's a Japanese woman, and it's like, she said, she went to her first tournament, but she had to leave, and it wasn't because she lost, but she just couldn't stand the smell. She said, you know, some of the women smell, but the men are a class of their own. And, I have to say this, I am not surprised at all. A, it's Yu-Gi-Oh!, and B, it's male gamers. And here's the thing, you can't smell your own stank, but other people can. And I'm not completely sure that Yu-Gi-Oh! Players are cognizant of the fact that they stink.
That's the first time I've heard of an actual community that stank as bad as, you know, I don't know if you know.
This but playing Smash, place, yeah.
The Smash community was notorious for that. Like, the joke in the FGC was, Smash players are showing up, bring extra deodorant to pass out.
And of course, remember the early years of PAX, there was something called Nerd Flu? Because yeah. People don't wash!
They used to joke that the Smash community should be sponsored by Speedstick because they need it.
And the guy got defensive. He says, I think I'm okay because I take a bath once a day, saying that people who play Yu-Gi-Oh! Stink is a prejudice. In the past, the smell was a problem. In the past, the smell was a problem. So we took...
Yeah, I saw it on like another site, Honors.
Go ahead. But anyways, so we took measures such as installing commercial air purifiers. I've heard that the smell has improved since then. So here's the things I'm taking away from that. One, it was a problem that you noticed. Two, is that the smell has improved. Okay, that doesn't mean it's gone away. It's just improved. It's just, yeah. People, you know, just, and here's the other thing, you just can't dunk yourself in a tub and expect to be clean. No, no, no. You have to shower and you gotta take out that soap, okay? I don't know, maybe soap is too expensive in Japan. Of course, I'm saying Japan. United States, here too. So, yeah. Hello?
That is so incredibly embarrassing, though, that like you would have an entire event just define a person's experience. Like, that is that is a so, and especially like that kind of thing, because like that's something that stays with you. I know I've been to a convention where I had to get in an elevator with someone who stank to high heaven, and it's something that I can't forget.
And you know the way
you printed into your mind,
the way you look. And for those who don't know, TJ is a big old bear. People would assume that he stinks, but he doesn't.
Oh, that's not fair. I take very good care of myself.
I said you don't. I mean, but you look like a big old bear. You know, you're the stereotypical guy who you think, you know, because it's always the guys, the neck beards, you know, the big, big bearded guys, you know, with crumbs in their beard and, you know. Anyways, yeah, so I just found it amusing. So we're going to move on to quick news. Star Wars Outlaws has a release date. It's going to come out on August 30th this year. But people are looking at some of the editions, the $100, $110, $130 editions. And, yeah, there's season passes and all that stuff. And do you need to be reminded that Star Wars Outlaws is Ubisoft? So we know it's coming.
What?
Oh, the typical not live service, but typical Ubisoft stuff.
Yeah. I meant like other statues or something. Or...
There's clothes. There's a pet game pass because there's probably going to be DLC. It's a typical Ubisoft open world thing. So you know what to expect. So yeah, here's the thing. I'm really interested in Star Wars Outlaws because what I've seen is good, but this makes me nervous.
Yeah, that's a lot of money. That's a lot of money for one game. Like. That and for it to like when you see stuff that's like over $100 like that usually means that you're getting a pretty fancy collectible to go along with it, but this is mostly just the base game and season passes, right? And early access.
I'd have to check it again.
Because, like, for Elden Ring, if you pay $130, you're getting a freaking awesome statue of a character to go with that, or a helmet, or something rad.
Yeah, Baldur's Gate 3 had stuff like that. It had a map and a statue of an Ithalid, and just a whole bunch of stuff. Badges and stickers.
So, yeah, if they're not giving you, like, really cool, like, limited collectibles to go with that, that $130 price range is ridiculous.
Okay, so, with the regular $70 game, you get pre-order bonuses if you buy it early. You know, if you buy the $110, you get the base game, the pre-order bonus, and 3 days early, and a season pass. The season pass includes story packs. And if you get the $130 version, you get 3 days early, season pass, a Rogue Infiltrator bundle, which is basically cosmetics, a Sabacc Shark bundle, which again is cosmetics, and a digital art book. By the way, I just got my physical Psychonauts 2 art book. 2 years after the game was released, I finally got the... I will say, no, it's a big old art book, you know? It's a big, heavy one, too. I haven't opened it from the shrink wrap yet. I'll probably do it at some point. The last thing I'm supposed to get is a Raz plushie. But most importantly, I got my name, my brain in the game, and that's all that matters.
You were one of the bigger backers for that one, right?
Yeah, I was. I got everything. I was one of the big, big backers.
Nice.
Because I love Psychonauts, so. And I knew it was going to be good because it's Tim Schafer. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, this is the sort of thing in which I'd buy just the base game, and then, like, 2 years later, I'll get all the other DLC, which has been marked down to almost nothing. That's what I did with Marvel's Midnight Suns. I got the Ultimate Pack for $20. I got everything, the game and all the DLC that was ever released for $20. So you know that it's going to drop at some point. See, that's the thing. People have to understand patience. Be patient. You don't have to buy everything now.
It's It's always that FOMO, right? Like, people complain about, like, not being able to... The times when people complain about the having to pay too much for something, it's usually cosmetic or usually something that they don't necessarily need for the base game. It's
horse
just
armor.
There.
Horse armor.
Horse armor.
Yeah. Power World's PvP Arena is coming this year with 3v3 PAL battles, and you knew this had to come. How could you not have this? I mean, who doesn't want to have, you know, Pokemon battles, you know, 3v3?
Yeah, and it's kind of surprising that this didn't come in, like, earlier.
Well, it's early access. I mean, it's not like people have to remember, it's not a finished product.
Sure, but you were always able to engage with other players because it's a multiplayer sandbox. So it's kind of surprising that it took until now to actually give PvP to the game.
Well, that's the way it is. A gaming showcase, and there was a lot of stuff that was shown off at III Initiative. The first we're going to talk about is the Rogue Prince of Persia revealed, and it's a 2D roguelike coming to Steam in May. Developer Evil Empire is doing it. Evil Empire is the one who did all the Dead Cells DLC. So this is going to be different than the other 2D roguelike Prince of Persia. This is going to be more of a... So you see, there was already a 2D Prince of Persia. This one's one that's going to be more like Dead Cells, and I'm up for it. I really like Dead Cells.
Yes. I actually got to play a preview of this game, and I can speak from personal experience that it was a fantastic time. I don't think anyone handles... There are only a handful of devs that handle fluidity and combat and motion the way that Evil Empire does it. And that ability that they have behind them lends itself well to Prince of Persia, where mobility is such a cool, like, it's almost like a part of the series identity is being able to do crazy movements. And then there's the fact that it's just like taking what they know about roguelike and applying it to Prince of Persia, it fits so well. Like, there was all sorts of different weapons that you could collect along the way. Some of them are more powerful. Some of them do different tricks. There's also, like, amulets that you'll get that will allow you to power up your stuff. Like, there's a parry in the game, and if I got a certain power-up at one point that if I parried an enemy, it would poison them. And you can power those power-ups up even further because it's like you get a four-slot bar to put your power-ups in, and they have bonuses based on where you put them in relation to each other. And it's kind of hard to explain with just words and no pictures, but, like, you might put one in between two other power-ups, and it has a bonus that powers up those two power-ups beside it. But altogether, like, the game was just the combat, the movement, the music, the art, everything was awesome. And they're going to be going into early access with this game in May, not because they want the game is, like, still rough and rugged, but because they've got a great foundation. They just want to continue to build more levels onto the game as players give them feedback on it.
Yeah. So there's no limited time Epic Games exclusivity. So they're really going to be pushing this game. Probably going to be a $30 game.
Yeah, and I'm very excited for it. Most people should be. If you like Dead Cells, you absolutely have to check this out. If you like Prince of Persia, you have to check this out because it's a good mix of both.
By the way, speaking of Dead Cells, they also showed off the Risk of Rain 2 crossover with Dead Cells.
And not.
On a side note, by the way, Vampire Survivors is finally coming to PlayStation.
Yes, and not only is it coming to PlayStation, but it's getting a big fat Contra DLC, which is weird considering, like, they're partnering with Konami and not using Contra instead of Castlevania. That's really funny to me.
The guys do weird stuff.
They do, and I think it's hilarious that that's the DLC crossover they went with for Vampire Survivors, was bringing Contra to the game. And not just Contra, but, like, deep-cut Contra. They're bringing Brad Fang from Contra Hardcore into the game as a playable character, who, if you didn't know, he's a werewolf with a machine gun arm.
I thought it was Castlevania. What happened?
Castlevania did a crossover with Dead Cells a little while back that you might be thinking of, but Vampire Survivors has never crossed over with Castlevania yet.
Did I see it? I guess the video was wrong then. I thought
Yeah, that's the one that hasn't happened with Konami and Vampire Survivors yet. But maybe someday. But for now, we're getting a kick-ass Contra bundle.
You know, it's kind of... You know, the thing is that there's such a Castlevania aesthetic to Vampire Survivors. Maybe if you thought it was already there. Because a lot of it just reminds me of Castlevania in the first place. So it's like, mm-hmm. you know, how would it make itself different?
Okay, I'm looking at the official trailer from PlayStation for V Rising Legacy of Game... Castlevania gameplay trailer one day ago.
No, we're talking about Vampire Survivors. You're talking about V Rising.
Oh, god damn it. I keep getting these two games confused, I swear. Okay. You said Vampire Surviving. Okay, that's... I don't know why I keep getting these two games confused.
Vampire Survivor is the top-down pixelated auto-battler, right. And then V Rising is like a an isometric RPG.
Okay, by the way, so Vampire Survivor inspired a few other games that are the same ilk, so... Now and they're also pretty good too. So
now that I have that straightened out in my head, it actually does make sense because Contra is all about bullet hell, and Vampire Rising looks exactly like that kind of thing, which I don't like. Or at least that's not my jam. I'll put it that way. It's not my jam, and so it makes sense that they would get a running gunning type characters to do that. Whereas V Rising was the one where you're isometric survival, and you can be Alucard, and that makes sense to me. That actually makes sense to me. Okay.
There's another Stardew Valley patch on the way with a new fishing and mine relaying stuff, and someone really needs to get Barone out of his house. Did he chain himself there? What's going on?
He seems to be pulling the head of Studio Ghibli. Okay, I'm done with this. I'm done, and then he keeps coming back to it. He must really love Stardew.
Maybe that's all. Maybe he's never going to make another game in his life. Oh, he's supposed to be making that chocolate game. But what time is he spending for that chocolate game? What's going on with the chocolate game? Did Barone just say... maybe he got allergic to chocolate, or...
I mean, he must be in a stable position that he can keep working on Stardew.
Yeah, but he's making another game. Why is he not working on his new game?
How do you know he's not?
I mean, because he's working on Stardew Valley.
I don't know.
I don't see any updates about chocolate. I only see updates about Stardew Valley.
I'm not in this house. I can't see what he's doing. He could be doing two things. He could be like spending each day a couple hours on each game. I don't know.
He did address this recently. He basically said that Stardew Valley has to be... Stardew Valley 1.6, which was the main patch that all of this spurred from, has to be bug-free and on all platforms before you'll continue work on Haunted Chocolatier.
But that's the problem. This is not a bug patch. This is just adding stuff. It's the 1.6.4. Next we'll have the 1.7 and the 1.8 and the 1. Actually, you know, if he keeps on going up these numbers, maybe at some point he'll just say, okay, I'm making Stardew Valley 2.
See, now this is what I would call labor of love. You know,
this is not a labor of love. This is a labor of OCD.
How's it not a labor of love?
This is an obsession.
He's giving free content.
Yeah, and nothing else.
Yeah, but that nothing else is coming at the cost of Stardew Valley getting all sorts of cool features and stuff.
That's what I'm saying.
But I want chocolate.
That's fine, and he'll eventually get there. And
yeah, sure.
Once Stardew Valley's done.
You know what they say about Valve, right? They don't know how to count to three. So.
He's not Valve.
Yeah, no, he can't count to two.
It wouldn't even be two. This would be a totally different...
No, he can't count to the second game. That's one game. One game. He doesn't know how to...
See, like, with Valve, those other games don't exist at all. He's already started work on the Haunted Chocolatier.
Yeah, and Valve started with Alex, and what have they done with that? Nothing.
Well, technically, then they have four Half-Life games, and they just don't call it 3 and 4. Episode 1.5 or some weird thing.
It's a VR game. It doesn't count.
Yeah.
Activision Blizzard and NetEase renew agreement to publish games in China. Activision Blizzard barely has had a major fallout with NetEase that saw the publisher's games listed in China, but that issue seems to be water under the bridge, and we know what the water was. It begins with an M and ends with a T. You think Microsoft doesn't have anything to do with this? Oh, no. They, you know, a name like NetEase, you know, it's always, I always think, oh, Analyze, you know, because I know someone's getting majorly fucked.
Microsoft wants to get into these other
markets to get the more money from the Eastern
market. But isn't that? It's just that Microsoft said, okay, this bullshit has got to end. This is what we're going to do. And boom, they got it.
It's money really talks. Funny, too, because in this story, like they actually tried to say, in a completely unrelated matter, Microsoft has made a partnership with NetEase in order to bring NetEase games over to Microsoft or Xbox platforms.
It's meaning like, Game Pass.
Well, meaning no, not just Game Pass, but PC, but Microsoft PCs and Xbox consoles.
Game Pass. They need content. They want people to buy a friggin' Game Pass.
But putting that aside, it's just really funny that Microsoft and NetEase were like, totally unrelated deal here in addition to the Activision Blizzard thing. Don't look over here. This is something else.
By the way, that reminds me, for anybody who's worried that Microsoft's getting out of the console business, they just talked about their next console and how much more technologically improved it's going to be and all this stuff. And they're not getting out of it. They're just starting. They just, you know, they want to just, I don't know. Thing is, do I want to get yet another Xbox console day one? Or do I? No, I'm probably going to get a day one because I have no life. I might as well. I don't buy many consoles. That's how I'm able to buy the launch Xboxes. I'm not spending it on the Switch or PlayStation, you know? Oh, by the way, someone pointed out that the upcoming Luigi's Mansion game, which is actually a remake of another Luigi's Mansion game, I think it was on 3DS, something like that. But it's a remake, and they said, they're doing it. Nintendo's bringing these late-stage remakes to their console, which means their new console is about to happen. They've done it with every single console, and they're doing it now. So basically, they're accepting this as, yep, Switch 2 announcement soon, this summer. And I agree with them. Nintendo has the same pattern when it comes to releasing consoles. They always launch their late-stage remakes on the old console just before they bring out the new console.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if that's the case.
No, it's pretty much the case. And you know that the Switch 2 is coming anyway. It's just the matter of when it was coming. And June is coming. Guess what? Not E3 is coming, and they'll be announcing it. Free updates coming to Fallout 4. Bethesda says the update will deliver 60 frames per second and increased resolutions of PS5 and Xbox Series X, and the PlayStation 4 and Xbox One will get a free update as well. And also PC gamers will get ultra widescreen support and other goodies. I'm pretty sure it has nothing to do with the Fallout TV show. Absolutely nothing to do with it.
But we're going to see stability improvements, fixes for logins. That's it. Is it going to
can't increase frames per second on the PS4 and Xbox One.
Sure.
Speaking of the Fallout TV show, it's getting rave reviews.
Yes.
And everybody's talking about how saying they saw me in the last episode doing a lot of stuff, but mostly me glaring at Maximus. So if in the last episode, check me out. I posted what I looked like on Twitter.
Yeah, so I didn't expect the show to ever be bad, but
it's been kicking ass, isn't it?
But like it's getting great reviews across the board. Our reviewer loved it, and Donovan he's a big movie and a TV guy, and he would absolutely tell us if something sucked.
See, the main thing with Fallout is tone, and they got the tone right, and everything else fell into place.
Yeah,
and from the trailer, it looked really good, so I knew that they hit the tone right, it seemed like to me. I haven't watched it yet, though.
Also, I'm going to tell everybody something. Almost everything in that show is practical. Mm-hmm. A lot of it is practical. I was walking around the set, and I was like walking through pre-nuke Megaton. People were walking around in their power armor suits, and the power armor suits are not CGI like they are in Halo. You know, everything has weight. And when they put on the gore, oh boy, it's like someone turned on the bloody mess perk.
So I'm going to wrap this because I think it's a great review anyway, and people should read it. Our own Donovan Erskine on Shaq News gave the season one for Fallout TV a 9 out of 10. He said in his prose, brilliant realization of the Fallout universe, solid character building, standout performances from Ella Purnell and Walton Goggins, unique take on...
For those who don't know, Walton Goggins plays the ghoul who was a Hollywood star before the bombs dropped, and now he's dealing with the fact that he's no longer a Hollywood star.
Yeah. Unique take on the series mythos and a gorgeous set design, which also speaks to that practical setup that you were talking about. Only con he had for it was it's a little for him it was a little too reliant on Fallout's common tropes.
Well, I mean, not everybody's familiar with those tropes, though.
Mm-hmm. But if you've been there for any amount of time, or at least since Fallout 3, then you know those tropes. They hammer them in just about everything Fallout.
Yeah, but the acting is also top-notch, especially the guy who plays Maximus and the girl who plays the lead, Lucy. I don't remember the names because they're relatively new people. Oh, the big star who's playing the father, and they always have that, is this time it's Kyle MacLachlan. And they sort of, like, redid the Fallout 3 opening, you know? She comes out of the vault looking for her father, and she's completely unequipped for everything that's going on outside the vault, you know, that sort of stuff. It also has an interesting thing in which these vaults are all connected, which in the series canon, all the Fallout shelters were not connected because they were all experiments, right? But these particular
and
ones
really
are all
far apart.
Yeah. These are connected vaults. Like, but I don't want to give away too much, except if you want to see me, I'm in the eighth episode.
But I'm glad to see that it's been getting such good response, because Fallout is awesome, and it's great to see more stuff in that universe.
It's here's the thing, though. You know, it would have been so easy to get Fallout wrong.
I always thought Fallout has a very flexible world if you wanted to make a story in it. There's not a whole lot of canon to get in writer's way on you know, Star Wars, Star Trek.
I got a little canon wrong with Fallout New Vegas dates, but that's fine. For those who don't know, this is basically Fallout 5 because it takes place in 2291 after all the other games. And it takes place in Los Angeles, which is convenient because that's where it's shot, except for the scenes I was in, which were shot in New York. By the way, speaking of this, Bethesda and Microsoft said, no, there's not any Skyrim. there's no Elder Scrolls TV show coming. I can understand why there's enough fantasy shows out there. It would sort of like melt with the others.
Yeah, speaking of worlds with a lot of canon to get in the way, that would be one of them.
Yeah. I mean, if there was, like I said, BioWare's already said they're not going to be making any Mass Effect series anytime soon.
Mm-hmm.
But there's other stuff. I mean, people have already been wondering about a Baldur's Gate series. That's fantasy. But then again, that's not Microsoft or Bethesda. Regardless, Fallout is great. And check it out. It's on Amazon. They released all the episodes. And hopefully, you know, the one thing that a lot of people had with it is that it's only 8 episodes. It's not a full season. It's only like a short little 1/3 season. Hopefully, if it's getting popular enough buzz that it gets a proper 22-episode season next.
I mean, it seems like extremely likely at this point. Like, why wouldn't Amazon order more of that one?
Yep. Anyways, we're going to move on to actual game news. Sega declares 2024 the Year of the Shadow, Year of Shadow the Hedgehog. This comes from Eurogamer. Sega has officially declared 2024 the Year of Shadow in honor of the ultimate life form. Sorry, Luigi. Fearless Year Shadow is primarily to celebrate the forthcoming release of Sonic X Shadow Generations, as well as the Sonic the Hedgehog 3 film. In addition, the Year of the Shadow will include bonuses in mobile games, Lego sets, and other additions to the Sonic Symphony World Tour. Both the mobile games Sonic Forces and Sonic Dash will include special events where people can unlock Shadow variant characters like Super Shadow, Vampire Shadow, Sir Lancelot, and Dragon Hunter Lancelot. A custom-built Shadow motorcycle will be on display at the MotoGP in Austin, Texas, the weekend, then in the UK in August. There's just a lot of Shadow stuff coming out. Shadow X Shadow Generations will release this autumn as a remaster of the 2011 game with new Shadow levels. It's coming to PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, and PC. So, are you ready for Shadow?
No.
Wait, why is this happening? Why?
Likes Shadow a whole lot.
What else does Sega have to talk about, damn it?
Sega has a whole plethora of library of games, don't they?
They also have like a third Sonic movie in the works.
And that's why this is being released to coincide with it.
Oh yeah, that's right. Shadow's supposed to be coming in the next one. I hate Shadow.
Well, you don't like Shadow. You don't like Knuckles. You don't like.
He's like okay. It's like they started with Sonic, and then they went with Tails, and Tails is like cute, but then they were like.
Well, Tails makes sense. He's a Tanuki.
They took the dial on Sonic and slowly started turning it towards edgy, and you ended up with getting Knuckles out of that when they moved it a little further, and then they like cranked it all the way to 11 and got Shadow.
No, they cranked it all the way to 13 and had Sonic kissing a human woman,
which is also weird. And also Shadow has like a girl, a human girl that he's like super super way into. It's weird.
What do you expect?
Very weird.
But you have to remember, Sega may not be making a hardware anymore. Sonic is still their flagship character.
Also, I'd like to point out that in Shadow the Hedgehog, the game, there's like a scene in which the president of the United States is like deciding what to do about Shadow the Hedgehog. And he looks at his desk and there's like a picture of him and Sonic the Hedgehog and Shadow the Hedgehog hanging out like friends. And it's weird. Like, everything about Shadow and everything that Shadow exists in is so schlocky and ridiculous.
Is it more or less weird than Ni No Kuni 2, in which the president becomes a kick-ass going into another dimension and becoming some young king's advisor?
That's also weird, but kind of more magical.
I can kind of get behind that one a lot more than these weird characters that just, I don't know.
It's just, you see the president look down at the photo on his desk like, man, we used to be friends, me and those hedgehogs.
Oh, God. See, like, we can have a whole episode dissecting Ni No Kuni 2. This is just a 13-year-old
middle
school
fan fiction. It makes perfect sense.
Has become
the president
this.
Could have owned a Genesis when 20 years ago when he was in college and he was playing Sonic. You know?
Yeah. Shadow the Hedgehog is the cool, like, Diamond S that you would write in your notebook in the 90s, personified.
The logo that no one can claim?
Yeah. But good for Shadow. Good for Shadow in his year.
Sure. I hope Sega can get more money from this so they can make more games, because that's what we really want, is more games.
Here's the thing. Do you really think there will ever be a year of Shadow the Hedgehog ever again?
No.
Do you think it'll be 2034? I'll think, gee, I wish we had another year of Shadow. Where's Shadow the Hedgehog? I miss him.
No. I don't really care about Sonic in general. The whole Sonic fandom story thing is just,
You know, Zoomers will be having kids by then, and their kids will have known nothing about Shadow. They may not even know anything about Sonic, to tell you the truth.
We'll get another year of Luigi before we get another year of Shadow.
Yeah, definitely.
Where's the year of Luigi?
The year of Luigi? It already happened.
He's too scared. He's too emotional.
Year of Luigi was, oh gosh.
Okay, forget that. What about
2013.
No. I want the year of Waluigi.
The year of 2013 was the year of Luigi because it was the 30th anniversary of the character. And also, Nintendo lost tons of money that year because that was one of their Wii U years.
1983. Yeah, that would... Here's the thing. In Mario Brothers, not Super Mario Brothers, but Mario Brothers, was that 1983 game? Huh.
Yes, the first one, I think, was 1983.
Keep in mind, that Luigi wasn't Luigi. It was just a different color template of Mario. Because he had two players in that.
Yeah, they didn't make him... I don't think they made him green until Super Mario Bros. I think he was more bluish in the first one.
I don't know. You know, I'm probably the only person who really enjoys Donkey Kong 3. People who don't know, that doesn't have N. Mario in it at all. It has some guy who's using a bug spray. And for some reason, he's using it to pump bug spray up Donkey Kong's ass.
2013 was an apparent financial failure for Nintendo, losing $457 million in total due to the poor reception of its Wii U games.
Hey, Wii U.
That's the other legacy of the year of Luigi.
Slay the Spire releases in 2025. Slay the Spire, the brilliant roguelike deck builder that was first released in Early Access in 2017, is getting a sequel next year. It was announced with a teaser video at III Initiative Showcase today. Near the end, we see that the Slay of the Spire's three launch characters, the Ironclad and the Silent, and a new Skeleton character. And it's interesting with the new Skeleton character. The Skeleton character only has 35 hit points, which tells me either they have intangible, or they have something that gives them two permanent hit points every time you kill an enemy. That's what I'm guessing. But the main thing about Slay of the Spire 2 is that it was going to be in Unity, but then Unity fucked its, you know, decided to fuck all developers, and they decided, yeah, we're going to Godot. Unity backtracked on the fee change, but Megacrit said, yeah, we're just going to stick with Godot. It looks weird, but it looks like beta graphics at the moment.
Yeah, but, like, how exciting. We're getting a full-on sequel to that game. You talk about that game almost all the time, Jono. Like, how do you feel about it?
I'm playing Balatro. I'm looking forward to it. I'm curious to see. I mean, I actually have a Slay the Spire board game coming soon. And that thing is going to be gigantic. It's going to have like 800 cards. Like I said, until I start playing it, I really don't have any opinion on it yet. You know, what I'm hoping is that the game is a little longer, because in the Slay the Spire, there's only three stages before you have to go after the heart. Like it to be like four or five stages, and it'll be interesting to see what changes they make. I don't think there's going to be that many changes. Just more.
Yeah. And we see some characters here, like the Lich, that's the newest character in here. What do you think of it? Like, as far as compared to the other archetypes
I told you, they've had in the first game. He has 35 hit points. They have 35 hit points, which tells me that they will gain hit points as they go along in the game.
Do you think that sounds better or worse than any of the other characters you've played?
Oh, no. I mean, it sounds it just sounds different. It's not like it's going to be that different. The new character is called the
Necrobinder.
Necrobinder. Yeah, it's not like he's going to steal life from characters he kills.
Hmm.
That's why he starts with 35 and then just grows.
Balatro is also getting DLC, or not DLC, but they're getting updates that are going to add more jokers and different qualities to the game. It's a good time for card games.
Here's the question, though. Is the Silent, and not the Silent, the Defect going to be there, and is the Watcher going to be there? Some people thought they saw the Defect in the banner. Because a lot of people, and me included, the Defect is the only one I've actually managed to beat the game with.
Also, I wonder, like, what the, like, they rebuilt the game from a ground up in a new engine. Like, we've seen a few different companies make engine switches these last few years. And it sounds like Megacrits was heavily because of Unity screwing the pooch last
year. No, they specifically said it was because of Unity screwing the pooch.
Mm-hmm.
For those who don't know, the Godot engine is a free and open source 2D and 3D game.
Yeah, and just like we said with Tekken recently, which obviously Slay the Spire is not as a big of a budget game as Tekken, but like Tekken 8 got rebuilt in an entirely new engine, and it made the game look gorgeous, but also it comes with its own physics issues. And of course, Jonah has beat the drum over and over and over on EA's desire to port every IP that it has to Frostbite engine.
They stopped that, thankfully.
But I hope this works out for him, because switching to a new engine can be good for a game. It can also like break things that you didn't expect it to break, because every engine works differently.
What's interesting, one of the games that was made with the Godot engine is Brotato. For those who don't know, that's a game that was inspired by Vampire Survivors, and you're now a potato.
Yeah. And And I've heard good things about Godot for indie game development. It seems like it's a good working engine. It seems like it has its own challenges, but don't they all?
Yeah, one of the games is Tail Quest Defense, which is another game with a fox that you haven't used, you haven't played. Yeah, have you played Tunic at all?
Yes, I played Tunic.
Oh, okay. I was just wondering, because it was a long time there. You were talking about how great Tunic was going to be, and you never played it. So at least you got to play Tunic.
Yeah, I eventually made it around to that, because it was one of our highest rated games in the year it came out, when it finally released out of early access. So I finally jumped in and gave it a go.
How'd you like the virtual manual that you kept on collecting pages for?
I thought it was really cool how people went out of their way to figure out to decipher the language and figure out how it fit together so that they could actually read what it was supposed to be.
The concept that they had was really cool, because you have a lot of these powers at the beginning of the game or abilities, but you don't know that until you find the page that tells you, hey, do this, and you can just do it, and it's so cool.
The difficulty ramps up kind of quickly, though. That's the only turnoff for – I mean, it's kind of incongruous. But what can you expect? Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, TJ.
EA denies rumor that it canceled an in-progress Dead Space 2 remake from PC Gamer. After last year's well-received Dead Space remake, one might have expected EA to put a team at developer Motive on a remake of Dead Space 2. It doesn't look like that's happening, though, because EA announced this week that the Dead Space remake's leads are now gathering a team to work on the Battlefield series. Another team at Motive continues to work on the studio's Iron Man game, and unless it's a big secret, no one there is remaking Dead Space 2. According to Giant Bomb's Jeff Grubb, EA and Motive had planned to remake Dead Space 2, but the project got canceled due to poor sales of the first remake. Without specifying exactly what about the claim wasn't true, that a Dead Space remake was ever planned at all, or that it was canceled due to lackluster Dead Space 1 sales, EA has denied Jeff Grubb's assertions. We don't normally comment on rumors, but there's no validity to this story, said an EA spokesperson. Grubb stands by the information. Dead Space 2 was definitely being planned, he tweeted. It had a code name, and they aren't making it now. The Dead Space remake was mentioned once during EA's Q3 2023 earnings call, which took place just after it came out, when EA CEO Andrew Wilson said that it had earned high praise from fans and critics alike, being dubbed a new benchmark for remakes, and even one of the best games of all time. The remake isn't mentioned in the transcript of any subsequent EA earnings call.
Which is why I believe EA here. They might have said, oh, if this does well, we're going to make it, but they weren't even going to start developing anything until it started making money, and the thing didn't make any money. So, yeah, I don't think they ever had – I mean, the most I think they did was basically plan, okay, so just get ready. If this sells well, we'll start up on Dead Space 2, but never happened, so they never started.
Yeah, I mean, it would be cool. I think that Dead Space was the game in the series that had the least to gain from a remake, but I still wouldn't have minded playing that game with zero loading screens, seamless animation, like the upgraded graphics, and the flamethrower. They made the flamethrower so damn good in the first Dead Space remake. It became like – it was like a useless weapon in the original game, and they turned it into a monster in the remake. I love that weapon. So I wouldn't mind going through Dead Space with that flamethrower, or Dead Space 2 with that flamethrower in a remake. But like, Motive went on to say that they're a two-project team, and like they said, they can't split their bandwidth between more than what they've got. They're working on Battlefield, and they're working on Iron Man. Now, there's full possibility to return to Dead Space down the line. But until they get these two things done, we're not seeing it. So it really depends on when the next Battlefield is coming out and when the next Iron Man is coming out. I would look more at the next Iron Man as the spot of where they might jump into Dead Space again, because once they work on Battlefield, it's an ongoing shooter, and they're going to continue to work on like updates and DLC and new content drops and all that stuff. Whereas Iron Man, who knows what happens when that game finishes. It probably just comes out and that's it, unless they plan like a big DLC expansion for it.
Yeah, just expect the Iron Man game to be a lot like Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy. Because it's made led by Oliver Pirl, who did that game. So expect something similar to Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy. They also did Star Wars Squadrons, and I enjoy that game too, especially in VR. I mean, Star Wars Squadrons is a totally different game in VR.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, like, I don't think it's the last we've seen of EA, of Dead Space, because they did a great job on that first Dead Space remake. Even if it didn't sell well, it was just an incredible game.
I'm willing to bet you they won't make a remake of Dead Space 2 anytime soon. What they're going to do is use the good buzz done by their Dead Space remake to do a new Dead Space game. A Dead Space 4, except they're not going to call it 4. They'll call it Dead Space colon something, you know?
They should call it Dead Space 3, but better.
Dead Space 3, but no co-op.
Yeah, if any game ever needed fixing and polishing and uncrapifying, it's Dead Space 3.
Nah, I think they'll just go with a new game and get just ignore the baggage, you know?
Mm-hmm. That'd probably be the way to go. Just completely blot Dead Space 3 from history as if it didn't happen.
Last item, go ahead, Scott.
Okay. The Dread are the new enemy faction coming to Destiny 2. This is from Shack News. Destiny 2's final shape preview livestream yielded a plethora of details about the next major content expansion for Bungie's live service game. Among the new content highlighted during the stream was the Dread, a new enemy faction that players will face off against during the final shape. Several images of concept art were shown, giving us a look at a unique design of this new enemy type. This includes winged creatures and humanoids that wield spear-like weapons. Most notably, the Dread marks the first brand new enemy faction in Destiny 2 since 2018. The game has seen several remixes and evolutions of existing enemy types, but this will be the first batch of adversaries in quite a while. We'll see exactly what the Dread is made of when Destiny 2 Final Shape launches on June 4th, 2024. As for the other news out of the latest developer preview, we also learned that the players will be able to equip both light and darkness abilities through a new prismatic system.
And oh boy, this better do well or else they're going to get swallowed.
Yeah. I have no investment in Destiny. Sorry.
No, it's fine. I will say, so Shack News is a huge Destiny 2 site. We have a couple players that just like dig into everything the game has, and they have their fingers on the pulse of the community. Destiny 2 has been in bad shape for a few months now, and it wasn't just the firing of a whole bunch of people that soured folks. They also kind of, I would say, underperformed with their last expansion. Folks didn't like it that much. And then, like, with the layoffs, the Final Shape expansion was supposed to be out already, but got delayed quite a bit. So they've been having a new season to make up for it. And they're kind of winning people back with the stuff. The current session of content is called Into the Light, and they've been using it to build up to what the Final Shape is going to be. And people have been pretty happy about it. They've been delivering some pretty cool guns. They've been delivering some pretty cool quests and raids. And the features that they've been showing for the Final Shape look like they're going to be pretty good. For one, this is going to be they're going to launch this Prismatic subclass, which is going to be the first time that Destiny has allowed you to mix subclass abilities together. And that's a huge thing, because being able to mix like arc grenades with like strand melee or stasis melee or stasis grenades with like solar grenades or something, it's something that you've never been able to do in all of Destiny, and it's going to allow people to be way more creative with their builds and create different kinds of offense and defense and interesting setups.
Yep, and like I said, if this doesn't do well, then Sony's just going to eat them up.
Yeah, I was like down on Destiny and Bungie for a bit. and I still think that they're not quite to – they're not, I don't think they're going to get back to the highs that they had. But I do think that they're starting to convince people that they might be back on track with what they're doing. The End of the Light content has been getting people back on board. It kind of looks like they may be able to pull this off.
We'll see. Bungie always is the worst at getting things out on time. They need to be given extra time to get things right.
Yeah, they do. And I think having Sony overhead kind of stresses them a little bit, because now they have a corporate entity that is like, we need to keep a schedule. We need you to get this out in this quarter.
And like Microsoft. Microsoft just said, Halo 2 is not finished. I'll just slice it in half. I'll fix it. We'll fix the rest of it in Halo 3.
I mean, but how many games have we seen at EA or Ubisoft or Take-Two Interactive that got ruined by the fact that the overarching executives needed a game to be out in a certain quarter?
Yeah, ever heard of Anthem?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And by the way, some people who saw Anthem in its early stages thought it kicked ass. Anyways, look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with the industry news and our gaming history articles. If you enjoy your feedback, leave us comments on our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, sign up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us an iTunes comments. You can find me on Twitter at Jonah Falcon.
You can find me at Johnny Chugs.
You can find me at Charter Moore.
And we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun. Be cool. Play games, y'all.